How about if I lead you through a body relaxation, and then we go into the breathing meditation a little bit? And, you know, in the breathing meditation, just let your breath be the way it is. Don't force it. Don't deep breathe. I shouldn't be hearing. Every once in a while you get somebody in a Dharma class that's like that. Okay? But just to do the breathing meditation to really calm our mind, settle it down so that we can then concentrate on the Dharma talk. Okay? So just watch your breath. Be aware of how your breath connects you to the rest of the universe. Yeah? Be aware if, as you do the breathing meditation over time, how your different breathing patterns correlate with your different moods. Because you can really begin to see that. You know, if you're upset, your breathing pattern is one way. If you're relaxed, your breathing pattern is another way. So it really gives you a lot of information about yourself and what's going on inside of you. Because sometimes we have a hard time recognizing our emotions. And when we pay attention to our breath or our physical sensations, that can often help us recognize what we're feeling. Okay, so sit up straight, your hands right on the left, thumbs are touching. Back straight, eyes lowered. And begin by feeling yourself sitting here on the cushion. Feel the sensations of your body on the cushion or on the floor. Be aware of being in a safe place where there are people who support you in your spiritual exploration, and give your support to everyone else here. And be aware of sensations in your feet, in your legs. If there's any tension, then let that go. Be aware of sensations in your torso, shoulders, back, arms. If your shoulders are tight from too much computer work or because you store your tension there, then try lifting them up towards your ears as high as they'll go. Tuck your chin in a little bit. Hold it there. And then let your shoulders fall very quickly. aware of sensations in your neck, jaw, face, and head. If your facial muscles are tight, let them relax. If your jaw's clenched, let that also relax. Position is firm and also at ease, and so too your mind, your concentration can be also firm and at ease. Then turn your attention to the breath. Place your focus either at the upper lip and the nostrils. Be aware of the sensation of the air as it goes in and out. Or place your attention at your belly and watch the rise and fall of the belly as you inhale and exhale. Or just in general, be aware of the whole process of breath. Be interested in your breath. Really watch how one breath is different than the next. If you get distracted, notice that, and then come home to your breath. So we'll have about 15 minutes to do this and to let the mind settle down. let's cultivate our motivation. And with appreciation for our opportunity to learn and practice the Buddhist teachings, then let's have the resolve to really listen and contemplate, meditate, and practice the teachings as best as we can. And to do this not only for our own welfare, but especially to develop our qualities so that we can be of greater and greater benefit to other living beings, particularly in spiritual manners, so that we can show them the path to full awakening. So let's set that as our long-term goal, and what we do together this evening is one step in that process. This is the Discovering Buddhism class, right? So I'm still discovering Buddhism with you. And I was told that you're on the section of the Lamrim about relating to a spiritual mentor. I often explain this topic at the end of the Lamrim because I think for Westerners who are completely new to the Dharma, the more we appreciate the teachings, the more we then see the reason to have a teacher and appreciate our teacher. Whereas when we're just new and we're trying to see what Buddhism is all about, you know, the whole topic of a teacher is not quite as important to us. But anyway, they gave me this topic, so here I am. I think it's important to have spiritual mentors, you know, because everything we learn in life, even ordinary things, comes from other people. No, we learn to tie our shoes because somebody taught us, and we learn to type because somebody taught us, and we learn how to turn the light switch on and off because someone taught us. So those are easy things, you know. Of course, more difficult topics if you want calculus and rocket science and so on. You know, we also need teachers. But especially on a spiritual path, working with our mind, which is a very delicate and sensitive thing, it's very important to have a spiritual teacher who knows the path to awakening and who can guide us properly along that path. Because if we hear incorrect teachings or get bad guidance, then instead of winding up as an enlightened being, we wind up in the lower realms. Because instead of creating virtue, we learned how to create non-virtue, and we followed that. So it's very important, really, to check the qualities of our spiritual mentors and not rush into a relationship. And, you know, really make sure that the teachings that we're learning are the ones that will lead us where we want to go. So there's different kinds of spiritual mentors. There's the one who gives us refuge in the five lay precepts. So there are qualities, you know, to look for in somebody like that. you know, they should know the teachings on the Four Noble Truths. They should know the monastic code, the Vinaya, quite well. They should have compassion and help us in that way. There's the next level up is the teacher who teaches us the Bodhisattva practices and gives us the Bodhisattva precepts. So they should clearly know all the Bodhisattva practices and engage in them and, you know, have compassion and be able to teach them. And then the last one is the tantric spiritual mentor. And so that person has to be very familiar with the tantric practices and that path and know how to give the precepts, how to give initiation and so forth. Okay? So at the beginning of the path, we start out forming a relationship with the, you know, the refuge teacher and the Bodhisattva teacher. And then as you go on and further, you get into Tantra. But that's a more advanced practice that is better to wait until we're properly prepared for before engaging in that practice. The relationship with our spiritual mentor is a very important one because, as I said before, it, you know, we're really relying on that person to teach us the Buddhist path in a correct way. Yeah? And especially that person should understand what renunciation is, how to generate bodhicitta, what the correct view of reality is. And they should have some experience in these areas. And they should also keep good ethical conduct because our spiritual teacher is a model for us. So we want to choose a teacher who behaves in the way that we know we need to cultivate. Okay. Not a teacher who has the same bad habits as we do. Yeah. Okay. And we also need a teacher who's going to be very compassionate because as beginners on the path, and even when we're not beginners, we often make a lot of mistakes and we're rude, we get angry, we don't follow instructions and so on. So we want a teacher who has a lot of patience and loving kindness, who's not going to get upset and kick us out because we made a mistake. Okay? So it really involves creating a relationship of trust with that person whereby we trust their compassion and they're not kicking us out, you know. But that doesn't mean that they're always going to be nice to us and always do what we want them to do. Okay. We hear, oh, the compassion of the spiritual mentor, and then we think our spiritual mentor is going to be the mommy and daddy that we always wanted to have, the person who loves us unconditionally and will give us lollipops whenever we cry. Well, you know, our spiritual mentor's job is not to please our ego. It's to lead us to full awakening. So very often in that process, what they do shakes up our ego and our self-centeredness in a way that can be very shocking and even painful to us because it makes us, if we're a sharp student when that happens, then we start looking at our own mind and saying, what was I expecting out of this relationship anyway? Okay? Because our teacher isn't always going to do whatever we want them to do. Because that's our definition of compassion and perfection. They do what we want them to do when we want them to do it. Okay. But that's not real compassion, and that's not real perfection. Like I said, their job is to challenge us and make us grow. And because we have minds that are quite defiled and we are extremely self-centered, then in their attempts to guide us, you know, all of our junk comes up. Yeah. It has to come up so that we can see it. If our junk doesn't come up and our spiritual mentor is always patting us on the back saying, you are wonderful, we are never going to grow. Okay? So when our teacher does things that we don't like, it doesn't mean that they're intentionally trying to do something. Because our mind is so super sensitive that we get offended even without people trying to harm us. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, whenever those things happen, we have to say, this is my button getting pushed because I spent time checking out this person's qualities. I know that they are a good spiritual mentor. You know, I really got to know them. I've seen them in a number of situations. I can see they're an ethical person. They know the Dharma well. They're compassionate. They're patient, you know. They have Dharma experience. I tested that out before I formed the relationship. Yeah. So then, when things come up, instead of questioning the whole relationship, you say, I already, you know, decided that person was somebody who's trustworthy. So if things are coming up, it's my mind. Yeah, it's my mind creating the conflict. It's not them. Yeah. Of course, if your teacher's doing something unethical, like embezzling the money from the Dharma Center or sleeping with all the students, yes, you know, you say something. But even then, you don't need to get angry and critical. You can say, how do I communicate this without getting angry and critical? But more often than not, where our mind goes is not to big ethical things like that, but to small things where our ego is affronted. My teacher didn't look at me. Yeah. My teacher plays favorites. They give more attention to so-and-so and not enough attention to me. Yeah. So-and-so always gets to go in and talk to the teacher. I don't. Yeah. The teacher gives, you know, little gifts to so-and-so. They don't give them to me. Yeah. The teacher always looks at me with a cross face and points out what I didn't do, even though it was something teeny, 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 because I hardly ever make mistakes. But the big, horrible things that other people do, my teacher just smiles at and doesn't say anything. And this is not fair, you know? So do you see how our self-centeredness comes up? Yeah? We want our teacher to, you know, to give us all the impartial love and compassion that we never had, and to hold us as the most cherished disciples. And our teachers should know how privileged they are to have us as their students. You know? So, you know, we get really kind of peeved at them. You know, they should be practicing student devotion better. Yeah, my teacher's not devoted enough to me. Oh, you know. So we get upset. We get angry. Yeah, we cry because we feel neglected. We get jealous of the other disciples. We get attached, you know, And we, you know, we want our teacher's attention, and we want it now. Not later. Now. You know, we really become like three-year-olds sometimes. Yeah? You will see this if you hang around a Dharma center long enough. But the thing isn't to see how other people become three-year-olds. It's to see how we do. You know, what are my buttons that are getting pushed? Because that is something that can be, if we have a close relationship with our teacher and we really trust our teacher, then when these things come up, we immediately go to, what is my defilement? What am I clinging on to? And so, whereas with other ordinary sentient beings, when these same buttons get pushed and we get upset or jealous or angry or whatever it is, we say it's the other person's fault and we just walk out or whatever. With our teacher, we're making the commitment never to walk out, but to always use the relationship to learn about ourselves. To use the relationship as a mirror to show me what's going on in my own mind. Okay? Is this making some sense? Maybe a little bit? Yeah? So, you know, for example, I remember years ago, this situation of everybody got to go in, because my teacher would sometimes invite different students to come in the morning to do the morning practice with him in his room. And the room was small, so there were just a small number of students who were invited to come. And I was very seldom invited. There were always other people who were invited. And these other people, I don't know why they were invited. They weren't the people who were really trying to practice hard. I was the one who was trying to practice hard. I was a really good student. Just this way of thinking shows you how off the wall I was. But anyway, you know, I thought, I'm a good student. I should be invited. I was so jealous of the other people, you know, so jealous. It was painful. And finally it got so painful that I said, I have to change. I have to change my mind. Yeah, because this is just too painful. And it's not my teacher's fault. This is a free world. My teacher can invite whoever he wants to into his room to do morning practice. Yeah, what right do I have to dictate that I should be the first one invited? And also every morning, you know. It's like, this is a free world. My teacher can do whatever he wants to do. All this jealousy is a product of my own insecure mind. Yeah. It's not my teacher's fault. This is my stuff. And that means I have to work on it. And I have to resolve it. So then, what's the antidote to jealousy? It's rejoicing in others' virtues. You mean I have to rejoice in the virtues of all these other students who get to go in there when I don't? Yes. That's exactly it. You have to learn to rejoice in the virtues of your fellow Dharma students and not think that you possess your teacher and can dictate what he does. Yeah, fair enough, isn't it? Yeah? So, what I'm trying to show you is how, after you cultivate a relationship with the teacher, you can use that relationship to really grow in ways that you can never grow with people who are always really nice to you, or, you know, people who you don't trust so much, or other kinds of things. Yeah. Now, whether we have a close relationship with our teacher depends on us. It doesn't depend on the teacher. Okay? It depends on us. Of course, we like to think it depends on them. You know, and again, you know, because they're so privileged to have us as students that, you know, they will want to, you know, keep us close by. And that means we always get to tag along after them and watch them in all these interesting situations. And, you know, when our teacher says, I need tea, then we go, I'll go get the tea. And we get the tea and knock all the other disciples out of the way. He told me to get the tea. You get out of here. You know, because we want to be close to our teacher. Yeah? So that we can watch all the, you know, all the little interesting things that our teacher does and learn about things and get the inside scoop, you know? Okay? So we, you know, in our infancy, we think being close to the teacher means being a groupie and tagging along. Yeah. And so you will see, you know, some people who really, the way they relate to their teacher is like people who are with a movie star or a sports star or something. You know, following along after them. And, you know, shoving everybody else aside so that they can bring them the cup of tea. Yeah. Because I'm following my teacher's instructions. I'm the one to bring the cup of tea. Get out of here. You know. So, I mean, we really have it all wrong very often. But the closeness to our teacher is not necessarily a physical closeness. At the beginning of the practice, especially, we need to live near our teacher and have contact with our teacher in the sense of attending a lot of teachings, you know, and doing a lot of practice together with other disciples. It doesn't mean that we need to follow around our teacher all the time, you know, wherever they're going. Okay? But we do need, as beginners, to, you know, we need to learn. And we need our teacher's guidance. We need them to correct us. Yeah? And believe me, it is not so difficult, not so easy for our teachers to correct us. Because they, you know, we are so ego-sensitive that whenever they correct us, we are insulted and, you know, kind of offended and everything like that. Okay? But we really need that. But we have to decide if we want that kind of relationship with the teacher. Okay? If we're really serious about progressing, I think that kind of relationship is very, very helpful. But we have to be ready for it and we have to really want it. Yeah? Otherwise, you know, some people really don't want to be corrected. They really don't want their teacher's advice. Yeah? They want to be able to do what they want to be able to do when they want to do it. They want to, you know, they don't want anybody giving them advice about do this or don't do that or something, yeah? And so for those people, they usually don't want to be too close to a teacher because the teacher's going to push their buttons a lot. Okay? So we have to really kind of decide if we want that and if we're ready for it or if we, you know, just want to come to class and learn for a while and get used to the practice and then slowly, gradually over time form a closer, more trusting relationship with a spiritual mentor. Okay, so it's not necessarily something to rush into, but to really, you know, think about it. And especially since you know, it takes time to establish that kind of relationship. It takes time for us to trust somebody, and it takes time for our teacher to see that we're serious. Yeah? Of course, you know, we think we're the best disciples around and that we're very serious. But, you know, we change our mind on the turn of a dime. Don't we? You know, our minds are not so stable. We say one thing, we do another thing. Yeah? And so for our teacher to invest time in us, you know, they need to really see, are we serious about learning and studying the Dharma? Or are we just kind of dabbling and trying things out? And, you know, next month or next year, we'll have moved on to the next interesting activity. Okay? So rather than assume that, you know, our teachers should give us all of their precious time and energy, it's better to say, how can I become a worthy disciple? How can I make myself into somebody who is receptive to my teacher's guidance? So there are different qualities that we want to cultivate. You know, we should try and cultivate intelligence. And here I don't mean IQ. I mean somebody who is willing to listen closely to the teachings and to think about them deeply. Yeah? If we're not really interested in listening closely and studying and remembering the points that our teacher taught and contemplating them in our meditation, yeah, if we don't want to do that, then, you know, we're not really serious about progressing on the path to awakening. Yeah, when we want to progress on that path and we're serious about it, then of course we're going to put our energy into attending teachings and really listening closely and remembering the important points and doing some review before the next teaching and doing some supplementary study to enlarge, you know, enhance what we've already learned. Yeah. So we want to make ourselves into somebody who is intelligent in that way, who's worthy of our teacher spending the time to teach. We also want to be open-minded. Yeah. In other words, we don't want to be somebody who's stubborn with very fixed views and opinions, because then whatever our teacher tries to teach us, we are cynical, or we doubt just for the sake of doubting, not because we really are interested and want to know, but just because we want to, you know, kind of show off how intelligent we are by asking smart questions. but that's not being open-minded. Yeah? Sometimes we can be very stubborn. Our teacher recommends, you know, certain practices for us to do, or gives us ethical advice, or, you know, whatever, something in the teachings, and we just say, I don't want to do it. I don't believe that. Yeah. He's teaching about rebirth. I don't believe it. Yeah. They said, stop lying. Why should I? That's baby stuff. I want high exotic practices. Yeah. So we really need to be open-minded. Yeah. A third quality, in addition to intelligence and open-mindedness, is we need to be sincere and earnest. Yeah. If we're not sincere and earnest, again, why should a teacher spend a lot of time with us? Yeah. We're just kind of, you know, well, if it's interesting, I'll listen. And if I have nothing better to do, I'll come. And maybe I'll think about what the teaching was about later. But if there's something more interesting to do, I won't. You know? And so we aren't really serious about getting out of samsara. Yeah, maybe we're just, using the teachings kind of, you know, they're interesting or whatever, but we're not really serious about liberation and full awakening. Yeah, so the thing is, you know, the more we learn, because we don't start off as a receptive, fantastic student, yeah. We start off as baby beginners. But as we learn, if we really think about what we're taught and put it into practice, then automatically we become a much more receptive student, a much more serious disciple, you know? Because after a while, you know, if we're not really serious about liberation and enlightenment, then there's so many other things to do in this world and we'll want to go do them. Yeah. I mean, you can travel around the world, you can go to so many interesting things and places and meet people and invent stuff and, you know, oh, there's so many things to do. So, you know, after a while, if we're really not serious about liberation and enlightenment, then, you know, we'll go off and do all those other things that seem much more interesting. But if we're really serious, you know, then we have a certain conviction in the Buddhist worldview, and we really want to develop our inner qualities and follow that path, and thus we become more receptive and closer to our teacher in our mind. Okay? Because what makes us close to our teacher is not the physical thing. Okay? Like I said, at the beginning we need to be physically close to hear the teachings and so on. But the real closeness comes the more our mind starts thinking and having the same qualities as our teacher. Yeah, that's what makes us really close. I remember one time in Dharamsala, seeing Lama Yeshe with Kyabje Sang Rinpoche, and Kyabje Rinpoche was sitting there saying something to Lama. It was a private discussion. I don't know what they were talking about. But Lama was sitting there, and the way he was looking at his teacher, it was like so clear that the student had bodhicitta and the teacher had bodhicitta. And they were very, very close because they had the same goal. Yeah. The same mental state, the same aspiration. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that makes us really close to our teacher, is when we understand the Dharma and have those kinds of Dharma aspirations really deep in our heart. And when that happens, then you know, we don't need to be physically so close because mentally the closeness and connection is really there. And then whenever we need help, yeah, we don't need to, you know, write a frantic email to our teacher. We need to sit there. And there's a practice I do. I call it doing a 911 to my teacher. Yeah. The 911 Dharma practice. So I'll sit there, you know, if I'm troubled or confused or whatever, then my 911 is like thinking of my teacher and thinking, what would my teacher advise me to do in this situation? You know, I've heard a lot of Dharma teachings. Yeah, I've received a lot of teachings. I've heard a lot of different things. What is the thing that my teacher would advise I contemplate right now to deal with this situation? And then when I really, you know, focus on that, something comes to mind. Yeah, I think that's what it means by receiving the blessings of your teacher, or receiving the inspiration from your teacher, is it comes to mind, oh, this is what I need to practice in this situation. Yeah. I remember one time I was having a lot of difficulties and I was very upset about something. Of course, I can't even remember what that was now, but I was very upset about something. And I did this kind of thing, you know, with thinking about Lama Yeshe in particular. And, you know, what would Lama tell me to do right now? And Lama used to have these very pithy little things that he would say to people. And he always called people dear. Yeah. And what came to my mind was, keep it simple, dear. And I could just hear Lama, you know, kind of looking and saying, keep it simple, dear. Of course, you know, with this Tibetan kind of, I can't even mimic that, but, you know, a way he would have of saying it. And it was like, well, that's exactly what I needed to do, because my mind was off proliferating some kind of huge story and making a big drama that wasn't even pertinent. If I kept it simple, I would just look at, you know, clearly at what's in front of my face and respond. That's it. That's all that's needed. Don't need to make it complicated. So just little things like that, where after you've listened to teachings for a while and you know how your teacher approaches things, then you can really do this kind of 911 and receive the advice you need without having to, you know, make a freaked out phone call. Yeah. Also, you know, they talk about appreciating our teachers. And by the way, you can have more than one teacher, and we're going to have different relationships with different teachers. You know, some of our teachers, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, if you choose to be a student of his, you know, he may or may not even know your name, because he has thousands of students. But then there's other teachers that, you know, you can consult with more regularly. So you're going to have different teachers who maybe teach you different topics, who you relate to differently, and all of that is perfectly all right. In terms of appreciating our teachers, I think that, again, the more we understand the Dharma, then the more the appreciation naturally arises in our mind. It doesn't have to be something we deliberately cultivate or we force ourselves to have. Lama Yeshe used to look at us and say, yeah, I don't need all this, you know, gurus, Buddhist stuff. If I said something that helped you and you practice it and it helps you, if you just say, thank you, Lama, that's good enough for me. It was beautiful, you know? And because what he was emphasizing was, it's not this kind of agagaga, you know, I like to be real, movie star, groupie mind. But it's like, you practice. Your teacher teaches something. You practice. It helps your mind. You get some experience and some sense of, if you practice even more, where that Dharma point can take you. And then you really, really appreciate the person who taught it to you. Yeah. And I think especially the more we understand what samsara is and how actually horrible and terrifying it is, then the more automatically we see the kindness of our teacher who explained the Dharma to us and even pointed out what samsara means and even explained to us how to get out. You know, that just naturally comes in your mind when you understand what samsara is. You know, or when you learn about bodhicitta and you do the meditations, and then you get some kind of feeling, you know, it's like, I don't have bodhicitta, but wow, can you imagine having, you know, day and night just the wish to really benefit others, and you want to benefit them so badly that you're completely 100% set on Buddhahood? Like, wow, that would be fantastic. And you get some little sense of what that is. Then it's like the person who taught that to me is the kindest person in the universe. You know, there's no way I can ever, 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 no matter what I do, repay that kindness. Yeah. I mean, we usually think our parents are kind to us. Our parents gave us this body. Our parents raised us. But our parents can't teach us how to get liberated from samsara. Our parents don't know bodhicitta. Yeah? Who is it that teaches us the path to ultimate joy and bliss, to ultimate freedom? Yeah? It's not our best friend. It's not our lover. Yeah? It's our spiritual mentor. And that kindness that they show us is something that impossible to repay. But you only get that kind of sensation when you've studied and practiced the teachings. You know, because at the beginning, when you don't have any feel for anything, and when our mind is full of like, well, how do I even know there's lower realms? Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, how do I even know there's lower realms? What do you mean, precious human life? I have so many problems, this isn't precious. You know, so at the beginning, you know, we don't really have a sense of the veracity of the Dharma and where it can take us. But as that grows in our mind, then I think naturally the incredible respect and regard and gratitude for our teacher just automatically comes, you know, if we're a person of any kind of integrity, you know. So, you know, that just comes. So, I think I, you know, just kind of rambled on a little bit about the relationship with the teacher. You probably have some questions or doubts, so I'd like to leave some time where you can ask what's on your mind. Yeah. You get the teachings by when your teacher is teaching, you show up. Yeah. You know, we don't, in general, we do not have the karma to receive, to have a teacher teach us personally and individually. You know, to have a teacher teach, it requires the virtue, the good karma of many, many people to come together. I mean, look, there's a group here. Yeah? I mean, Geshe La comes because there's a group of people that show up here. If you came alone, do you think Geshe La would come alone to teach you? I'm so important that he has nothing else to do. I'm one person, he's going to come and teach me. Little bit conceited, huh? So when our teacher is offering a teaching, then we go. And we make it a point to go where our teacher is. Yeah. We are the ones who have to put out our effort to attend the teachings. Okay. We don't need the personal instruction to me individually. We need the teachings to every that are commonly given. When we're a very high-level realization teacher, disciple, then the individual guidance, you know, kind of on delicate aspects of the practice is important. Yeah. But we don't need a teacher individually to you know, we email them, teach me precious human life. You know, what we do is if we want a teaching on a certain topic, we go to the teacher, we make 3 prostrations, we make an offering, and we say, please teach me this topic. And, you know, and we say, if you'd like, I will organize the event so that more people can come. And then we do the organization of the event and make it available to other people. If it's the kind of teaching, you know, that is to be given in that kind of situation. Okay?
Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah. So it's not just, you know, like, well, I want to study this, so teach it to me. You know? And sometimes, I mean, the traditional thing is that we have to ask 3 times. Sometimes, you know, we're really impatient. It's like, you know, I want this teaching. You know, come on, teach it to me now. Yeah? Or I want to do the refuge ceremony now. I want to do it. Come on. You know, this is, you know, this kind of attitude, teaching, you know, thinking that our teacher is our servant is totally not going to get us anywhere on the path. Because we really have to cultivate humility as a quality of a good student, you know? Somebody who is humble. And, you know, they talk about serving our teacher. You know, we serve our teacher by making offerings of material things or money or whatever. We serve our teacher by volunteering our time. Yeah? So many of you volunteer your time so that the teachings can happen here at this center. Yeah, it's a way of serving your teacher. And the best way to serve your teacher is by actually practicing what they instruct. Yeah, so that means we go home and we really think about what we learned and we practice it. Okay, so we have a lot of responsibility in order to create a good relationship with our teacher and create a close relationship with our teacher. Yeah. It's not our teacher who's going to go, oh, you're just the sweetest disciple. Come on, sweetie. You know. Actually, one time, I'll tell you this story, then we'll do some more questions. I had been to a conference in Taiwan, and a Dharma conference in Taiwan. And at the end of the conference, the master was, there were several hundred people in the audience, and the master was introducing some of his disciples who had helped organize the conference. And, you know, this nun did this and this and this, and please thank her, and we all applauded. And this one did this and this and this, please thank him, and we all applauded. And, you know, praised several of the disciples for what they did. And then there was one monk standing there, and the master looked and said, but that one was completely lazy. I asked him to do many things, and he just didn't do them. Yeah. Now, how would most of us feel if we were that monk? This big. Or this big because we're puffed up with anger. We're furious, you know. I looked at that monk, and that monk just stayed steady. And I thought, that is a good disciple. Yeah. And that is a disciple that's close to the teacher, because the teacher knows that he can say that, and that his disciple, that monk is not going to run out the door. Yeah. It was really beautiful. I've never forgotten that. Not that I want my teacher to speak that way to me. Even though it's probably true if he does. Yeah. I mean, my teachers have scolded me. So. Other questions? How do you recognize and or choose your root teacher? What does holiness recommend? Is you, at the beginning, you go to teachings, you know, and you just listen. You don't form a relationship with the teacher at the beginning, you listen. And you check, you know, is what that teacher's teaching according to the general Buddhist view? And are they keeping good ethical conduct and so on? So you really check that, those qualities, yeah? And then your root teacher is usually somebody who really touches your heart, you know, who has really touched your heart very deeply. And at the beginning, that may not be apparent. It may not be apparent at all, yeah? And even who your teacher is, let alone your root teacher, it may not be apparent. And that's completely okay. His Holiness says the Buddha is our teacher. Yeah. But as you listen to teachings, as you practice, then as some time goes on, there's usually one person, you know, or maybe two or, you know, whatever, that really, it really touches your heart, you know. And to form a relationship with the teacher, I mean, if you take any of the levels of precepts, that forms the relationship with somebody as your teacher. You know, in my case, I didn't even know anything about this when I first met Buddhism. When I first met the Dharma, I didn't know the difference between Hinduism and Buddhism, or Gelug, Sakya, Nyingma, Kagyu. I didn't know anything. All I knew was that what these people said, when I thought about it logically, made sense, and when I practiced it, it helped my mind. That's all I knew, and I just kept coming back. And I kept coming back and back and back. And eventually, it kind of dawned on me, oh, well, they must be my teachers. Yeah? That's just kind of how it happened. Yeah, because I didn't know anything, really. Less than zero at the beginning. Other questions? Anything? Okay. Then let's just sit 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and contemplate what we've heard so that we can take it home with us. And continue. So just review in your mind some of the important points, yeah, so that you can continue to think about them. and let's dedicate the merit. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends. Okay. Thank you all very much. Just to let you know, there's some brochures out on there about Srivasti Abbey, and they have two websites, tuptonchildren.org and srivasti.org, and there's a lot of Dharma teachings on those websites, video and audio and written. So please feel free to go online and access things.